Wow. Hi, guys.
Hi.
I'm Daniel Zingale. I'm honored and a little humbled to be up here with these three. Aren't they amazing?
Yeah.
And, you know, I have to tell you, when I was working for governors, one of the things you get to do sometimes is you get to bring in real people to try to balance out the constant drone of paid lobbyists and well-financed interests that are in the governor's ears all day. And I wish I'd known David then, because I would have brought him in. I would love to have seen him go at Arnold Schwarzenegger with some of that. But America and I first met in that situation. And one of the things that happens is you bring in people who you just know are going to be the voice of the people, and then in the presence of a governor or a president, they melt a little bit, right? And they don't quite speak the truth that you're hoping that they would speak to make up for all the hours of all the lobbyists and all that. Well, guess what? When America came out, that didn't happen. She didn't turn it down from what you just saw. She turned it up. And what I remember most is when she left, the governor said to me, she's really passionate about those tamales and the people who make the tamales. I think he thought she was like the leader of the Tamale Makers Union or something. But she was awesome then and she's awesome now. So these three, I think, are representative of what I love about this conference. There's such a density of really smart people out here today and out there. It's, I think, as many smart people as Google headquarters nearby here. But people here are working on big solutions to problems that I think plague the nation, not just our health, but our prosperity. And I was thinking about how, you all know we have an election in a week from today. When the folks from Ohio raised their hand, I had to stop myself from running out with absentee ballots, but I know you guys are going to vote. But, you know, polls show that there's still these voters out there that are disappointed with some of the other big conventions of this year. They don't think their solutions are really being put forward, the candidates, the campaigns. Have disappointed them. And I was thinking, I wish they could, you know, be here to hear this today, to hear there's this New Mexico senator yesterday, Gilbert Ortiz Epeño. I don't know if you guys heard his session, but he talks about his proposal for a constitutional right to health in New Mexico. And it's not just for health care, it's a fundamental human right for health itself. And, you know, listening to that, that's one of those big ideas that ought to be out there. That's an idea I think is both smart and right, and I'd like to see in the public discourse. But all the panels and publications, the plenaries, the people here, I think, have solutions. And I was thinking that if Washington, D.C. and Sacramento and y'all state capitals and the boardrooms of big corporations, if being right were enough for those decision makers, there'd be a blueprint here at this conference for the nation. This would be a place where a blueprint was born. But the point of my comments, Tony asked me to talk about communications, strategic communications, is this. Being right is not enough. We've all experienced it, right? The frustration of big, momentous decisions being made without regard for the science, without regard for the facts, without regard for the proven impact on public health. And I've chosen this picture because I want you to remember that prolonged national debate about death panels, those death panels that didn't actually exist. It was debated for a long time, right? So this idea of being right, not being enough, is what I'm really going to focus on today. And when we started this Building Healthy Communities initiative, and I don't like that word either, let's call it a campaign or a plan. When we started Building Healthy Communities, we at the endowment started by admitting that being right wasn't going to be enough, that we couldn't research and publish and present our way to the kind of change we were seeking, because we were actually seeking change that would require political will. Tony talked about power. This is all today sort of about power. And to influence the political will, you actually have to figure out how to take those ideas that we know are right. The facts are there, and they're right, the right thing to do. And you have to figure out how to communicate with people who don't come to this conference. And just as you were saying that you have to talk to youth about where health really happens, it doesn't just happen in the doctor's office or the diets or whatever, it's the same with the policymakers, and it's the same with the voters that elect them. When they think about health, they still think about doctor's office, latest diet craze, that's the conventional wisdom out there about health that we're up against. And you can't get the political will that has to come from community up without taking on that preconceived notion about health, and you have to do it in a strategic way. So one way of saying that is that we decided we were going to try to find the intersection between public health and populism. And we think that's as important for the field of public health nationally as it is for our work here in California. You've got to try to find that, try to break through to people on those fundamental ideas and change the norm. Now, here's where I want to have a candid conversation about what we're up against. Our fellow citizens out there, God love them, when they think about health, they do think about the doctor and the diet. That's just the reality. We have lots of research to show that. But at the same time, when they think about public health, if they think about public health at all, they're probably thinking about these big, scary scenarios that they've seen in movies. Movies like Contagion. Did you guys see that one? That was like the notion about public health. Or maybe they're thinking about the threat from the genetically altered guys like this. Did you guys see that one? Or even worse, the threat from the zombie epidemic. And my 12-year-old son, I'm not kidding you, he actually has all this respect for the Department of Homeland Security because he thinks they've contained the zombie epidemic in an underground facility in New Jersey, and you really have to work to convince him otherwise. It's actually true. So how do we do that? So I don't believe that we're going to be able to get our friends here in Hollywood to make this movie, BMI and Legend. It'd be nice if they would, but I don't think that's going to happen. But the serious point here, my friend Stephen, thanks you for laughing at that slide. You talked me into putting it up. The serious point here is that people, when they think about public health, they're thinking more science fiction than science fact. And they're thinking about things they don't have control over, and we really have to change that. And a lot of us in this room, many of you, I recognize, know we can do it because we've seen it done, right? Some of us remember when tobacco, its complete free use, sale, marketing, unrestricted, unlimited, was just the free market at use, and that's the way it was going to be, instead of the public health menace that we knew it was. And we did make some important changes there, and we know saved a lot of lives. Some of us, myself included, are old enough to remember when seatbelts were considered an ugly appendage to a convertible, not the lifesavers that they became, right? So we've seen it done. But here's the hard part. To make that kind of change in public health attitudes today is a lot harder than it used to be. It's much more complicated, right, in today's media environment and today's world. So think about the fact that when many of us were growing up, there were basically three ways to communicate with the American people. How many people remember that? Three choices on the dial, and it was a dial. Yeah, and no remote. So then along comes the digital cable revolution, and suddenly there are hundreds. And then it seems to me, in dizzying speed, right after that comes the internet, and hundreds turns to thousands. And then today, if you consider everybody's Facebook page and Twitter feed, those are all unique media outlets too. So it's getting up to a billion. Unique media outlets, they really are. Each one has its own character, its own messaging. So the question is, how do we break through to that? And some of us believe the answer is we really have to be as creative and as attention-grabbing as, and don't pretend like you don't know what I'm talking about, those revenge-seeking birds that do battle with the egg-stealing pigs. Some of you know what I'm talking about, right? That gets that breaks through. So how do we be creative like that, but about a serious subject? How do we... I think Tony has said, how do we crack the code on communicating the social determinants of health in a way that will make sense? So that people begin to understand big decisions are being made about the choices available to people that's affecting our health. So I want to give a shout out real quickly to the Robert Wood Johnson folks. I don't know if any of y'all are here, but Robert Wood Johnson did a great study about how to do effective messaging. And it basically says you have to be simple, you have to be repetitive, you have to be relevant to people's lives and the places where they live. So if you guys are really interested, go to their website and download it, put it on your iPad, read it on the plane. But it really captures what I'm trying to say here. And we took that finding about simplicity and repetition and all that and the complicated ideas around public health, and that's what created this Health Happens Here campaign with our communities as partners. Because what we heard in no uncertain terms from folks who are living it is our health is happening right here. It's happening in the place where we work, where our kids go to school, in our neighborhoods. So we turn that into these campaigns. And they're built around the principle that health happens when a street is safe enough for kids to play and get exercise, to walk to school, for adults to get exercise too. Health happens when a grocer is located in a neighborhood where there have only been convenience stores and liquor stores for miles around. And health happens when a community is transformed. Transformative change you heard about on this panel today. So health happens when an empty lot is replaced by a park or a playground. Health happens here. Health happens when schools recognize the whole health of the student, the social, psychological, emotional health of the student. Health happens here. Health happens when preventive health care is available to everybody, regardless of their immigration status. And make no mistake, Big decisions about our health happen here, in state capitals, city halls, county boards of supervisors, and in those government buildings in Washington. Health is happening in all those places. So the other thing we're excited about in this Health Happens Here campaign is when you break through with that idea about where and how health really happens, you've also called the question of equity. Because it immediately begs the question of why is health happening over here for these people and not over here for some others, as Tony referred to. I hope you guys have seen these zip code campaign ads out there. I'll tell you, when we launch them and whenever we use them, we get some criticism for their being too disturbing. And that may resonate with some of you. And I'll tell you, we thought a lot about that. They are disturbing. They're meant to be disturbing. But they should be disturbing. It's the reality and the truth behind these ads that's a problem, not the ads. So you're going to be seeing more of them. And we invite you to take them and use them yourselves. This is a tool with no proprietary branding of the California Endowment. This is a campaign we would love to see stolen from us and replicated all over the country. You know, sadly, we could make as many of those ads as there are zip codes in this country. We could paper the walls here with those zip code ads. And it's tempting because those of us in this line of work, this field, we have a lot to say. We want to put it all out there. If you don't believe me, look at the APHA program book today. We have a lot to say. But one of the things we've learned, and again, RWJ helped us with this, is that our strategic messaging can't look like our program books. It won't break through. It can't look like the backs of some of our cars, right? This is actually not my car, but a lot of my friends' cars look like this. Some of your cars look like this, I know it, because you got a lot to say and it's all good. But here's the problem. Our opponents, people who actually want to see reductions in spending on public health, their cars look like this. They may be wrong on public health, but that simplicity of message is smart and strategic. So in building healthy communities, we came to realize that our cars probably have to start looking a little bit more like this. So some of us were out there peeling off some of our bumper stickers, even though we want to say every single thing. We've tried to find something that captured this big idea. I'm going to leave you with just a couple examples of how we're putting the campaigns into action. As Tony mentioned, there are three Health Happens Here campaigns. First one's called Health Happens with Prevention, and that's really about Obamacare right now. What we did with that one is we took the overwhelming complexity of that new law, more than 2,000 pages, we boiled it down to some very simple benefits that affect people's lives in the neighborhoods where they live, especially when it comes to prevention and wellness. And by doing that, we actually have helped to build public understanding and support for Obamacare in California, which has given the policymakers here a lot more courage when it comes to putting California in the lead of implementation, which, as some of you know, is not happening in a lot of other states. Second campaign is Health Happens in Schools. This one really came from our sites. The youth, David, in our sites brought an issue to us that we hadn't imagined was a public health issue, but is, about an epidemic of suspensions and expulsions, especially among young men of color in schools in California and elsewhere. So we took a very simple fact that we learned from our youth, which is that California every year is suspending more kids than we are graduating. Stunning, right? So we just pushed that fact out there in every venue that we could with ads like this. And that has really helped to fuel what is a comprehensive reform of school discipline policy now underway in California. But it was the focus and the sense of urgency from our youth that we think really made the difference. I'm going to leave you with one final tool, which some of you may have seen, but it's a 60-second ad, which we'd like to know what you think about it. It's really aimed at getting to that Angry Birds market, getting their attention. It's up to over 1 million views and won an award for in the top 10 animations of the year. But again, any of these things you like, come see us at the California Endowment booth in the exhibit hall. We'll make the tools available to you. We've really made it easy. We'd like to hear your ideas. Most importantly, if you take one thing from my piece here, believe that you can help drive this national conversation about how and where health really happens. No one is better qualified than you are to carry that message out there. You can do it. We've done it before, and we'd love to help if we can. So take a look at this. This is Jamie Lee Curtis narrating.
Did you know a park can prevent heart disease? A grocery store can stop diabetes. That a drinking fountain can put an end to childhood obesity? Did you know how long you live depends on where you live? Children born in neighborhoods with safe parks, fresh produce, and clean just 20 years longer than those born in places without them. We can do better. We have the power to give every child a longer, healthier life. To build a stronger California. We can change the places where we live, work, and play. Because health doesn't only happen in the doctor's office. Health happens here.
Okay, so there you have it. That's our 21st century public health practice. And we have a few minutes for some questions. So ask them.
Where's my water bottle?
There's a microphone over there. Yes. 23006, isn't it? Oh, nine. Okay. 23. All right. Well, she knows better than I do. Yes. Yes.
So, how do you keep yourself personally from getting hurt, banging your head against the wall every time you try to simplify your message, every time you try to get other people on board, every time you try to say, health happens here, don't hit down a tree, put up a farmer's market? How do you protect the door?
We have hard heads. So the question is basically, how do you get past the sort of the frustration of meeting constant resistance? I use a lot of alcohol personally. So.
I want to share with you that every time I am in these meetings or something is happening along those lines, I bring to my memory the other things that are happening. Last Friday, we had 300 youth in a youth organized forum to create a debate among candidates to be mayor of Santa Ana. It was organized, the moderator was 15. And they organize, they read, and they prepare their questions. So when I get in those meetings, I think about them. We have a group of women that are giving tortillas in the streets. And they create lines of tortillas. And they go outside to do outreach, and they say, we are giving tortillas for free. So in 10 minutes, we have a long line of people collecting tortillas. And then they give a package with 6 tortillas to people, and they say, tortillas are part of our culture, but violence is not. We have a group of residents from the zone, the health happens here zone in Santa Ana, that we have had so many shootings lately, and we have had several kids killed. And these residents decided that they wanted to respond every time there is a shooting. So we text, because they don't have email. So we have texting, collective texting. And from one evening to the next, we have 70, 80 people responding with chocolate, champurrado, and pan dulce. And we invite the community to respond and be out there. So I think we have to fill our memories with possibilities, and we have to experience success from levels that are very clear for the people in the community to levels such as passing the first ordinance for transparency in Santa Ana, which is a major accomplishment, or creating the first book with the data that actually is starting to focus on place-based data in Orange County. So I think we really need to tell ourselves that in spite of the many stories of defeat and the prophets of disaster, there are a lot of things, and if you are not seeing them, you need to go where these things are happening or create this change.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to add something real quick, especially when it relates to the youth, is we can't be afraid, or at least I try not to be afraid of demonstrating failure. So even when we fail, it's really, you know, that old idiom, it's about the journey, not the destination. So, you know, with my filmmaking program, at the end of the 8-week summer program, I tell them, and I hope, I don't really care about whether or not your film is good or bad. I care about who you walked in here 8 weeks ago and who walks out of here at the end of the program. So it's really about that journey that we try to emphasize. And if we fail along the way, that's okay. We use it as a learning opportunity.
Another question over here. Yeah, so I'll take that one. So, you know, most of my professional career is in governmental public health practice in a couple of different departments. And the frustration, I loved governmental public health. I actually never imagined I would ever leave it and thought I would retire as a health officer. But one of the frustrations that I had, and I say this to folks who, you know, ask me about the work that we did in Alameda County, is that we never built a constituency for prevention. We never built a political constituency that would get up in front of the decision-making bodies and argue for public health practice, would argue for prevention effectively. We had other constituencies that would argue for specific services, that would argue for specific programs, and certainly we had law enforcement and fire and all those people that had constituencies that would naturally argue for their, you know, essential nature. And I think that part of what this work is about building that political constituency so that there are people who will turn out and say, no, we have to invest in young people. No, we have to stop investing in jails, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I think this is a 21st century public health practice. I think that there are elements of governmental public health practice that have to be essentially nuanced on the political side. I say this work is small p political. It's not partisan political. It's about building a constituency that's got your back when you're pushing an agenda that, you know, doesn't have, you know, somebody getting paid at the end of it. It's really about investments. It's really about young people. It has a long arc of change. You need a constituency behind you to sustain that work. And I think that governmental public health often fails because we essentially focus on the narrow, short-term, programmatic deliverables, and we ignore the long-term arc of change because that's harder and because we're afraid of the sort of political headwinds that we have to face in order to drive that agenda. So what's critical about this work is that if you can have people at your back, people at the community, people who vote, arguing for this kind of change, then we can see sustainable changes in public health practice going forward, even at a governmental level. Does that help? All right, well.
I guess I wanted to know a bit more whether you've seen this being a role in governmental
health
can take on in
terms
of Delaware and here in California.
Yes. Yes. Short answer is yes. I mean, at least a lot of the influence I've had over this work comes from work that we did in Alameda County Public Health Department, hiring organizers and trying to get down deep into communities. Just for perspective, the California Endowment spends about $150 million a year throughout the state on everything that it does. The Alameda County Public Health Department is part of an agency that spends about $500 million a year just on health, a little bit more. So the scale of government expenditures on health across this state dwarf anything that the California Endowment can do or Robert Wood Johnson can do. So if we're going to be successful, we have to see a translation of this practice into governmental public health practice. Otherwise, it's just going to be a nice boutique experiment that people say, hey, it was a good idea, but nobody's going to pick up the reins. Yeah. You know, there's a microphone there so that I don't know if people can hear you in the back.
Yeah. The difficulty that we had in
Okay, sure. I think we're, I mean, I'll give you a short answer, and I'm happy to take, you know, have a conversation about the longer answer. You know, I think fundamentally you have to ask what the public health department is there for. What is it trying to do? What problems is it trying to solve? And if you have an authentic conversation about that, you recognize quite quickly that you're tinkering around the margins with most of your programs. You're in consequence management. And so there's enough discretionary income in public health to actually take some of that discretionary income and figure out ways to apply it at these deeper drivers of change. If you want to have a conversation about that, I'm happy to do it. There are some experts here from Alameda County and elsewhere. I know Monterey County is doing some great stuff. But I don't think it's an excuse to say that governmental public health is too siloed and too, you know, too deliverable driven to actually do this. I think that that's just false.
Hello, my name is Gavin Donald. I'm with the City of Richmond. I want to know the panel's thoughts about communicating the successes you're talking about, like in Santa Ana and Boyle Heights, because I think it really motivates our work to keep on going. And we're also one of the BHC sites in the City of Richmond, and I think these stories help us continue the work that we're doing. But I think sometimes there's a lag of getting all this successful work together. Because it helps build the movement for us. So I think, I don't know if you have any thoughts about communicating all these successes. Some people have more successes, you know, with CEOs, with parents,
Daniel.
With the government. And so just wondering how we could, you know, bridge all that.
This will
to show the same.
This will probably have to be our last question for time reasons, but there's an opportunity for folks to stay beyond the time. I just don't want to hold anybody hostage.
Well, I know that this is an evolving sort of field, the digital media, and I know we have youth dispatched in sites across all the regions that are working on the digital media, and we actually just added a new piece, or the endowment just added a new piece, where there's going to be TA provisions for all of the sites to be able to amp up their digital media work, as well as to localize and create a hub just for the sharing of the data and the success stories. So very soon enough, I think there's going to be a home base for you to be able to get that. And I think other communities, at least regionally, are beginning to do that more effectively. I think that's some of the things that certainly I've heard in visiting some of the other sites, is that they want to see just more cross-site training and just information being shared back and forth. So it's in the process, but it's obviously a growing field and continuing to evolve with the work that we're doing.
I think we need to do more to communicate success and opportunities. I mean, we are looking into Richmond for their work in planning, and that is informing a lot of what we want to do in Santa Ana. And while we get something that is better, I think we need to be very proactive and visit each other and spend time with each other and talk to each other while the website that the endowment has created get better. And I think that the community really wants to visit and to experience these conversations that can fuel all our imagination, right?
So I want to ask you to give a round of applause for our speakers. And the last thing I want to say is, you know, to thank you for being here, to thank you for expressing an interest in this work, and for continuing to contribute, to criticize constructively, to participate, to share your lessons learned. We think that this really is the future of public health practice, and we'd like to see this practice adopted, modified, refined, and perfected as we move forward. We can only do that in dialogue with the leaders of the public health community, which you represent. Thank you very much.